listening to CPR, communitypublicradio.org. And this is Weekday World. I'm your host, Don DeBar. With a report of some of the news and events of the past 24 hours from the CPR Newsroom. From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Saturday saw a nearly five-hour session of the UN Security Council discussing the situation in Venezuela, with the U.S. furthering the effort that began earlier in the week. On Thursday, the U.S. led a meeting of the Organization of American States in Washington, D.C., and we bring you that meeting in its entirety.
This special session has been convened at the request of the permanent missions of Argentina, Brazil, Canada, Chile, Colombia, Costa Rica, the United States, and Peru. In line with document CP/INF.8180/19. Before we begin considering the order of business, I would like to invite the distinguished delegations and the public that is with us today to reflect on the symbolic value of the place where we find ourselves. That is the Simón Bolívar Hall, which is the home of the Permanent Council of the OAS. This Simón Bolívar room is a room deserving of the greatest respect from everyone present. It symbolizes political dialogue at the highest level in our hemisphere and all of our nations. I make a respectful call for everyone to ensure that this political dialogue is conducted within the norms of diplomacy, international law, and those standards which guide the Permanent Council's activity, as well as dignity for human beings and respect for all of our nations. In light of the provisions of Article 43 of the Rules of Procedure, we will now move to approve the... Venezuela is recognized. Thank you very much, Chair. At this first intervention, we will refer to the point of the convening of this d'etat occurred. It was promoted by the countries that claim to justify it here in this organization. This is an atrocity against the democracy, sovereignty, and right to peace that our nation enjoys. It is a violation of all international law. This session runs over the OAS Charter and the will of our people. We reject your invitation to this meeting, and anything stated today will not be valid for our country or our nation. Thank you. Thank you to the Venezuelan delegation. As there are no other requests for the floor, we will move to approving the draft order of business for today, which is document CP-OD-2203/19. It is hereby approved. The ambassador of Argentina has requested the use of the floor. Ambassador, I give you the floor. Good morning, Chair. On behalf of several delegations which make up this permanent council, I will make a statement in support of the transitional government in Venezuela. The delegations of Argentina, Bahamas, Brazil, Canada, Chile, Colombia, Costa Rica, Ecuador, United States, Honduras, Guatemala, Haiti, Panama, Paraguay, and Peru reiterate the right to democracy that all people of the Americas enjoy and the obligation of governments to promote and defend democracy as established in Article 1 of the Inter-American Democratic Charter. We reiterate the constitutional authority of the National Assembly of Venezuela, which was democratically elected, and we staunchly support the steps adopted in order to request humanitarian aid at the international level, that political prisoners be freed, that assets of corrupt government civil servants be frozen, and that we ensure the guarantee of civil servants and members of the military that support the National Assembly in reestablishing democracy and the rule of law in Venezuela. Against this backdrop, we recognize and express our full support to the chair of the National Assembly, Juan Guaido, who took the presidency as the interim president of the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela in line with the constitutional standards, and we recognize the illegitimacy of Nicolas Maduro's regime. We strongly believe in restoring democracy, representative democracy in Venezuela, led by the presidency of the Republic, and we hope that this will be orderly, peaceful, and include free elections that are just, transparent, with international observations as soon as possible. This is pursuant to the Venezuelan Constitution and also in line with the Charter of the OAS and the Inter-American Democratic Charter. We reiterate the illegitimacy of the presidential elections on the 20th of May 2018 because the free, just, transparent, legitimate process or credible process, it did not have the most basic Lamentable. Standards. We regret and condemn strongly the repressive actions at the hands of the Maduro regime against the Venezuelan people, as well as the actions that have led to a total economic collapse, forcing millions of Venezuelans to leave their country behind, seeking food, basic medication, and an opportunity for life in another country of the same region. We demand that security and protection of the interim president Juan Guaido be guaranteed, and also that of members of the National Assembly. We call on the form of the National Assembly to be respected, as well as the rights of all of its members without limitations on the rights that they legitimately hold on behalf of the Venezuelan people. In this sense, we support the National Assembly to continue working with the aim of ensuring Venezuela returns to the path of democracy using the means necessary to ensure a peaceful transition in the interest of the people of Venezuela and to return to prosperity and stability for all Venezuelans. We support the ratification of the commitment to Venezuela with the OAS Charter and our will to continue working within full rights of this organization. Thank you. Thank you to the ambassador of Argentina. We are now on point two of the order of business. Therefore, the delegation of the United States has requested the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We actually have a senior representative who will be here. He's actually in the building right now. So if we could just wait for a minute or two, I think that he'll be here. I think he's walking in.
Therefore, if you agree, Mr. Secretary of State, if we can give the floor to the next person. One moment, please.
And thank you. Thank you, all the delegations. We appreciate your patience.
Estimada delegación de Estados Unidos.
To the delegate of the United States. We will give the floor to the next delegation requesting the floor, and then when Mr. Pompeo arrives, we will allow him to speak. So, the ambassador of Paraguay is now recognized. Thank you, Chair. Since June 1st, 2016, a date on which this Council began dealing with the situation in Venezuela, Paraguay immediately stated that political, economic, and social instability had already taken hold, and that political instability affected the basic rights and fundamental freedoms of the Venezuelan people. We, at that time, had urged Venezuela to consider even using a revocatory referendum, which is included in their national constitution, as a springboard for building a solution to the crisis. Then there was a series of statements as part of a dialogue with Venezuela that led to no results, and the OAS and in other fora, the conversations continued, and they still continue. That is, it has been now over 3 years, and we can only conclude that the Nicolas Maduro regime has only found every possible way to avoid and sidestep any possible definitive solution. Therefore, then, since the 10th of January 2019, this council declared the regime in Venezuela as an illegitimate government, and we have seen that with our actions and with history. Therefore, the Paraguayan government declares its full support to the acting president of Venezuela, Juan Guaido, to lead the restoration of public freedoms and democracy in our fraternal Republic of Venezuela. Venezuela can count on the Paraguayan state's full support in restoring freedom, democracy, and constitutional order. We are proud to have been among the first to break diplomatic relations with the Maduro regime. And on this point, we staunchly believe that we are on the right side of history. My country has made strong, firm statements defending democracy and human rights of Venezuelan citizens. We congratulate the representatives of the National Assembly for their courage as the only constitutional authority democratically elected, and today they are beginning to work on returning their country to the rule of law. And we therefore also recognize our admiration for the people of Venezuela for their bravery. We make a sincere appeal to the Nicolas Maduro regime to not use violence against your people. Paraguay will continue respecting international law. We will continue with our foreign policy that is based on principles. We will support this process, both from the OAS and from other fora. We will do so so that Venezuela can respect its constitutional order and, as soon as possible, hold presidential elections that are free and in line with international standards in force. Personally, I note that rain is a symbol of greatness, and we hope that it brings good tidings to the Venezuelan people. Thank you very much to the ambassador of Peru, Paraguay. I now give the floor to Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State of the United States of America.
Thank you very much. The United States is a friend of Venezuela and of the Venezuelan people. We've watched Venezuelans suffer for far too long. We know what they know, that the tyranny of the now defunct Maduro regime has for far too long, choked the country and its citizens. Yesterday, in solidarity with the Venezuelan people and out of respect for Venezuelan democracy, the United States proudly recognized National Assembly President Juan Guaido as the interim president of Venezuela. You've seen the statements from President Trump and from myself. Many other countries, including a number of OAS states, have also recognized the interim president. We thank them for their support. It's now time for the OAS as an institution, as a whole, to do the same. All OAS member states must align themselves with democracy and respect for the rule of law. All member states who have committed to uphold the Inter-American Democratic Charter must now recognize the interim president. The time for debate is done. The regime of former President Nicolas Maduro is illegitimate. His regime is morally bankrupt. It's economically incompetent, and it is profoundly corrupt. It is undemocratic to the core. I repeat, the regime of former President Nicolas Maduro is illegitimate. We therefore consider all of its declarations and actions illegitimate and invalid. In light of these facts, we call on Venezuelan security forces to ensure the protection of Interim President Guaido's physical integrity and his safety. We've seen reports that a number of protesters were killed yesterday and that more than 100 were arrested. So I reiterate our warning about any decision by remnant elements of the Maduro regime to use violence to repress the peaceful democratic transition. The United States did not arrive at this conclusion overnight. We came to this conclusion after a long and bitter experience and following a considered assessment of the facts. And we're not alone. The OAS General Assembly has itself agreed to these facts. In June of last year, the OAS General Assembly declared the re-election of former President Maduro an invalid sham. This past January 10th, the OAS Permanent Council declared former President Maduro's second term illegitimate. Venezuela's National Assembly became the only legitimate, duly and democratically elected body in the country. On January 23rd, National Assembly President Juan Guaido declared himself the interim president of Venezuela pursuant to Article 333 and 350 of Venezuela's Constitution. He made this declaration with the full support of the National Assembly and, most importantly, of the Venezuelan people. In his public address, Interim President Guaido also outlined the steps he plans to take to restore democracy to his country, including free, fair, transparent, and truly democratic elections. The United States stands solidly behind him. We stand ready to support the efforts of the National Assembly, the Venezuelan people, and the interim president to restore democracy and respect for the rule of law in Venezuela. We also stand ready to provide humanitarian assistance to the people of Venezuela as soon as logistically possible. Today, I'm announcing that the United States is ready to provide more than 20 million in humanitarian assistance to the people of Venezuela. These funds are to help them cope with the severe food and medicine shortages and other dire impacts of their country's political and economic crisis. Our announcement of aid is in response to requests from the National Assembly, led by the interim president. As a friend of the Venezuelan people, we stand ready to help them even more, to help them begin the process of rebuilding their country and their economy from the destruction wrought by the criminally incompetent and illegitimate Maduro regime. Our support for Venezuela's democratic hopes and dreams is in sharp contrast to the authoritarian regimes across the globe who have lined up to prop up former President Maduro. And there is no regime which has aided and abetted Maduro's tyranny like the one in Havana. Maduro's illegitimate rule was for years sustained by an influx of Cuban security and intelligence officials. They schooled Venezuela's secret police in the dark arts of torture, repression, and citizen control. Maduro was a fine student at the Cuban Academy of Oppression. We call on the OAS and all its member states to act on basic, decent, democratic principles and the incontrovertible facts on the ground. Each of us must live up to our calling to promote and defend democracy, as expressed in the tenets of the Inter-American Democratic Charter, to which everyone in this chamber is a signatory. And we call on our partners and responsible AS member states to show leadership and pledge support for Venezuela's democratic transition and for Interim President Guaido's pivotal role in that. We look forward to welcoming Venezuela back into the fold of responsible democratic nations and remaining in our Inter-American community. We look forward to welcoming representation of the interim Venezuelan government to the OAS at the earliest possible opportunity. And we look forward to working with all responsible OAS member states, with the Venezuelan people, our Inter-American system, and with the interim government of President Guaido to restore democracy in Venezuela. We each have a critical opportunity to help the Venezuelan people live free once again. I ask my colleagues to reconvene a meeting of foreign ministers to continue our conversation on the peaceful, democratic transition for Venezuela. History will remember whether we help them or not. The United States calls on all nations of the OAS to make the right choice, and make that right choice right now. Thank you.
Whoa. por favor.
Please. Please.
Por favor. Por favor.
Please. Please.
Por favor.
Please, at the very outset, I told you that this was not allowed. Please, please,
por favor,
please,
por favor,
please. Please, security, in all due respect, we have to respect the Simón Bolívar room.
Tiene la palabra.
I'd like to give the floor to the Ambassador of Peru.
Buenos días.
Good morning. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen.
Por favor. Por favor.
Please.
And no.
Por favor, señores de seguridad.
Security.
Mantengamos el orden.
Let's please keep order here in the room.
Buenos días.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Chairman.
Con su venia,
with your permission, I'm going to now read the declaration from the Lima Group.
Adoptada ayer,
adopted yesterday
por los gobiernos
by the governments of Argentina,
Brazil,
Canada,
Chile,
Colombia,
Costa Rica,
Guatemala,
Honduras,
Panama,
Paraguay,
and Peru.
Point 1.
They recognize and fully support the President of the National Assembly, Juan Guaido, who assumed the presidency of the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela in all due respect of constitutional norms and given the legitimacy of the Maduro regime. 2, they support the beginning of the democratic transitional process in Venezuela within the framework of the Constitution with a view to holding new elections as soon as possible with the participation of all political stakeholders and with the guarantees and international necessary standards for a democratic process. 3, they condemn acts of violence that have taken place in Venezuela and urge respecting the rule of law, fundamental rights of all people, and social peace so that there can be a transition for a government. They ratify their decision to continue to firmly support a return to democracy in Venezuela. This was the communique adopted yesterday by the Lima Group. With your permission, then, I should like to read Peru's comments now. In Resolution 1117, approved by the Permanent Council on the 10th of January, it was agreed to not recognize the legitimacy of the Maduro regime, considering that the electoral process held on the 20th of May did not comply with international standards. It did not have the participation of all political Venezuelan stakeholders, nor was there a free, fair, transparent democratic process. This is crucial for democracy, as enshrined in Article 3 of the Inter-American Democratic Charter. The illegitimate regime The illegitimacy of the regime is furthermore a result of... I don't believe I have the microphone, says the Speaker. Very well. Am I being heard? Asks the Speaker. I think I was being heard before. Asserts the Speaker. Testing. Am I being heard? I am. Thank you very much. I shall continue. The illegitimacy of the regime is the result of a continuous process of dismantling democracy, which was spoken to in this council, and support and mediation in good faith were not accepted by the regime's authorities. The consequences are very great. Break in the democratic order and the humanitarian crisis that have become, because of their breath, have become an issue throughout the region. In the resolution 17, we look at the National Assembly as a democratically elected organization in Venezuela. The Peruvian government, in keeping with what was agreed to in that resolution and with the declaration of the Lima Group on the 4th of January, adopted a host of specific measures and reaffirmed its unequivocal and firm condemnation of the rule of law in Venezuela. Yesterday, the Peruvian government recognized the President of the Assembly, Juan Guaido, as the President of the Bolivarian Republic. Manifested its support, and at the same time, Peru made an appeal so that the democratic process can take place peacefully in a transparent manner and respecting all of the constitutional guarantees and fundamental rights of the sister nation of Venezuela, with a view to holding new elections as soon as possible, with the participation of all political stakeholders, observing the guarantees and international standards for a democratic process. And that is why we fully agree with the declaration read in this permanent council by the delegate from Argentina, and we reiterate that it's only through full restoration of democracy and respect for human.
That was the Thursday meeting of the Organization of American States in Washington, D.C., discussing the case of Venezuela. We will continue to follow what is going on in Venezuela very closely. And again, we should be speaking with Tony Solo early next week about that.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.
Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Breaking a promise, Trump wants regime change in Venezuela. Old habits die hard. Also, the trials and tribulations of Roger Stone. Will Russiagate ever end? Cross-talking some real news, I'm joined by my guest here in Moscow, Mark Sloboda. He's an international affairs and security analyst. We also have Viktor Olevich. He's a political analyst, as well as a leading expert at the Center for Actual Politics. And we have Dmitry Babich. He is a political analyst with Sputnik International. All right, gentlemen, cross-talk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Obviously, we're going to start out with Venezuela. And, Viktor, I want to be very specific with you. What was your reaction when the person that goes by the name of Elliot Abrams was appointed leader of American foreign policy and the Washington consensus, apparently, to deal with Venezuela?
So Elliot Abrams definitely has the right credentials to do this. This is somebody who is a well-known neoconservative. As with many other neocons, he comes from a family of Democrats. He was deeply involved in the Iran-Contra affair. In fact, he was convicted of withholding information from the U.S. Congress. He was pardoned by George H.W. Bush later on. He was also involved in decision-making in the later Iraq war. And now we see him appointed to deal with the coup, essentially coordinate the slow-moving coup in Venezuela.
So would you say that he's fluent in regime change?
Definitely. He is the person to get to do this.
He participated in the attempted coup in 2002 when Chavez was removed from power for several days. And it was a real coup. I mean, it was classical. No, there was no alternative leader. It was just the army, you know, trying to oust the president.
And, of course, the State Department congratulated the Venezuelan people.
Well, yes. They did find the leader. He was called Pedro Carmona. And what's interesting is he also hid in the Colombian embassy. Mm-hmm. And then when the coup failed, he was transported into Bogota, into Colombia, where he resides to this day. This was a Colombian businessman with ties to the U.S., and he was essentially appointed president by them.
Mm-hmm. The other little detail they've missed, other than his involvement in dismissing Palestinian elections when they didn't go the way that the U.S. wanted, back to the Elliot Abrams goes back to the Reagan Bush, the first administration, where he was responsible in overseeing death squads right. in Guatemala that were responsible for the genocide. Guatemala, also in Latin America, by the way.
El Salvador.
El Salvador as well. And Guatemala specifically, just Guatemala. These death squads were responsible for the extermination of 200,000 people, entire villages wiped off the face of the earth. And when confronted about this on Charlie Rose near the time, he answered to the accusations of him being a war criminal specific to this. He said, "What, would you put all of us who won the Cold War on the dock?" That was his response.
Well, that's an easy answer for me. Dima, in the larger scheme of things, it's quite remarkable how this whole mentality of regime change, it fails. But they've got another shot at it here. I mean, this is built into the foreign policy consensus here. There can be no other way to deal with the world other than forceful change.
Well, to all the people who say that there should be dialogue with Washington over Venezuela, whatever, I can refer them all to the book by Gene Sharp, where he actually wrote, black on white several years ago, no deals with dictators. Once you start the operation, no negotiations, no compromises, and this has been their playbook in Yugoslavia. This has been their playbook in Libya. Actually, if you remember, Milosevic and Gaddafi, they made the same mistake. They believed in the so-called guarantees. You know, Milosevic believed in the guarantees gave to him by Richard Holbrooke, the American diplomat in Dayton in 1995. Accords. And then suddenly Holbrooke said a few years later, Milosevic can kill his own mother. All of my guarantees
Gaddafi
are void.
Gaddafi got rid of his weapons of mass destruction.
Exactly. Gaddafi believed the January 21st agreement with Yanukovych.
Exactly. This is where I wanted to bring this in here,
exactly.
Because it's a very interesting echo of the coup that was played out in 2014 on the Maidan in Kiev. Victor.
And so we actually see a repetition of that situation in Venezuela, where Guaido actually is saying that he is not ready for any negotiations with Maduro.
Exactly.
He is demanding.
Is his middle name Poroshenko? Because it could be.
Klitschko.
Okay. And essentially, they're making an ultimatum, saying that either Maduro agrees to new elections, and the agreement he has to agree to them within 8 days. So he has to schedule them within 6 months, six to 12 months, and he has to agree to that within 8 days. They know full well that he is a legitimate leader of Venezuela, elected in a legitimate election. In fact, there were European observers, among them from Spain, from other countries, Western countries, that observed and said the elections were fair and square. And of course, they know he will not agree to this.
Mark, you were telling me earlier, you sent me a message about the legality of all this. I think it's important maybe to shed light on that.
Yeah. First of all, I have to correct a pronunciation. We're talking about the name of this opposition candidate who has just been declared president of Venezuela.
Plucked.
Because the U.S. has that power, evidently, right? His name, as Secretary Pompeo specified on a national broadcast, is Guido. Not Guido, but Guido. So thereon, we should use the correct U.S.
Mark,
Secretary
talk to about the, talk about no. the legal. Talk about the legalities of, because I think it's really important.
Yeah. So the fig leaf for the U.S. so-called diplomatic intervention, yet another coup attempt in Venezuela, is as they prompted this puppet Guido to claim who is the head of the National Assembly, a body that has been since removed by all powers by the Supreme Court of Venezuela, to claim Article 233 of the Venezuelan Constitution. And this was prompted by Pence. They directly pushed, planned. The Washington Post has revealed this, that this was secretly planned for a long time. They pushed him. If you seize power in this way, we will back you. So he did, right? You know, this is, clear. So Article 233 of the Constitution only addresses when the president is absent from office, like if he's physically or mentally incapable, if he just disappears and abandons his post, and it does, it provides no legal rationale for the U.S. to interpret
again.
This
is an echo of Ukraine in 2014 because it was against the Constitution.
The National Assembly has no ability to impeach.
I can tell you when my heart sank. You know, when Michael Pence said, "We stand with the people of Venezuela," I immediately remembered.
After all these sanctions,
how Obama said in 2014, "We stand with the people of Ukraine." And in 3 days, the terrible civil war started, in which 10,000 people were killed. He didn't stand with the people of Ukraine when Donbass was cut off from electricity, from water, when people did not receive pensions from the central government in Kiev. He didn't stand with the people of Ukraine when they were bombed, you know. But when you hear, "We stand with the people of something," that people is in trouble. So Venezuela is in real trouble.
Oh, we're going to talk about
right
this
now.
This is the standard of the U.S. regime change playbook. You exacerbate and exploit existing social and political tensions. You claim to speak in a monolith of the people. We're doing this for the Iraqi people, for the Syrian people, for the Libyan people, for the Yemeni people, right? And now for the Venezuelan people. Which Venezuelan people? Because the country is divided and you're interfering with interfering. Which grievances?
This coup was preceded by long preparation by Washington and its allies in Latin America. So we see now that the military attaché to Washington has switched loyalties. It's perfectly understandable that this person was in contact with the Americans for a long time. It didn't just happen today or yesterday. Also, remember, you know, the adversaries of Maduro, those who criticize him, they lay all the blame for economic ills on him and his government. In fact, we had seen the same strategy being used in Chile before 1973, before the coup that ousted Allende, who died during the coup. What did the U.S. and its allies do? A strategy of destabilization, a strategy that was
financial crisis.
Economic destabilization.
So the worse the better,
Yes, in fact, it wasn't just harsh American sanctions against Caracas. It was also a strategy of economic destabilization that was there, put in place to get the Venezuelan economy in such a state that they would hope, the masses of Venezuelan people would support this new American-appointed president. Still, they do not.
So the Venezuelan government has been under illegal unilateral sanctions of the U.S. and its allies for years now, dating to the Obama administration, ever tightening, ever getting better.
And under Trump, they're getting worse.
Of course, they're getting worse. There's the argument that's being presented, these sanctions didn't have any effect. They're only targeted sanctions against leaders. Completely false. These sanctions are all-encompassing. They have blocked the sale of oil. They have seized Venezuela's gold and assets in other countries. They're now transferring it to their puppet leader. It has cost the Venezuelan economy $23 billion.
Mark rightfully mentioned the oil company. You know, the first thing that the, if the American so-called president would come to power in Caracas, the first thing they would do is privatize. And it would be privatized in the interest of those
American. I wonder who those shareholders would be.
Let's be clear, what's at stake in Venezuela? Venezuela has the world's largest proven oil reserves, more than Saudi Arabia, more than Russia, more than the United States. More than 300 billion barrels of oil, right? Iraq, Iran.
I'm going to jump in here, Jen, so we have to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT.
You're listening to Weekday World on CPR.
Okay, gentlemen, so much more to talk about in Venezuela. Victor, put it into a geopolitical spectrum here, because we have China, obviously, is against a forced change of government in Venezuela. Russia is, Turkey is, Iran is, many
Mexico,
other countries.
Mexico
is on the fence. Bolivia. Is on the fence. Mm-hmm. Okay. India is on the fence here. What's the importance geopolitically?
So there are three different geopolitical reasons for the U.S. To do this. First of all, the Washington establishment basically views Venezuela as a ground where Chinese and Russian influence is growing, has been growing over the years.
So they made, because Venezuela made the sovereign choice of dealing with Russia and China.
Yes, in fact, China is one of the biggest investors in the Venezuelan economy, and oil sector, Russia is the second biggest investor after China. In fact, Chinese investments are much more significant than the Russian investments. So by promoting this coup, Washington wants to essentially get Russian and Chinese influence off the continent. But in reality, it doesn't want any government in Latin America to be able to exercise its sovereign powers and choose how to have any.
So the Monroe Doctrine is still in play.
It's very much in play, as we see through these days. Second of all, Washington wants to reverse the left sort of anti-American trend in Latin America, which has encompassed Bolivia, it has encompassed over the years Nicaragua, Venezuela, Cuba, of course, since the 60s, and Washington has recently had some success in Salvador, where it put in Lenin Moreno, curiously a person named Lenin, but who is not a friend of the left, not much of a friend of the left. And then there is a third reason, which we mentioned just a few seconds ago, the oil situation. If the U.S. gains control of the Venezuela oil production, then it would have more of an influence on the world oil market in general. So these
prices
are the main three reasons geopolitically for this.
Well, a lot of people hope that Europe's position would at least be nuanced, and it isn't. Basically, their ultimatum, the ultimatum that came officially from France and Germany, but that will be supported, already supported by the European Union, is that elections in 8 days.
It's ridiculous.
Well, first, people in Europe, these European leaders, they also mispronounce Guaido's name.
Guido.
He is Guido for
Guido.
Them.
Guido.
And I think I know why. You know, there was a guy named Guido Westerwelle, the German foreign minister who went to Maidan and who openly supported the protest action against the government of Viktor Yanukovych in 2013.
But, you know,
and that was not interference.
You know, so,
that was just
so
helping the people.
Just to kind of give perspective here. So when there was the illegal coup in Kiev in 2014, the European Union didn't say, we need elections in 8 days.
Well,
did they?
If you're,
and also, how much has the European Union commented on the yellow vests in France?
Well,
they're very, very concerned about the people of Venezuela.
Let me remind you that there was a deal signed by Yanukovych and the opposition that elections would be held in 8 months.
Yes.
And then the European Union completely forgot it.
Because the next day.
The next hour. Because their guys took, by force, they took the headquarters of the Party of Region, set it on fire, killing several people inside, and the European Union said, this is the will of the people, we can't reverse it, let elections be held whenever they want, and
it wasn't just several people,
yeah,
those snipers
and the
killed
European,
more than 100
exactly,
people.
Exactly, in the previous days, the European Union was actually more active in Kiev than the United States, because the United States was represented by Victoria Nuland, who was just ahead of one of the departments
in
the State Department.
The
European Union was represented by Guido Westerwelle.
I think Venezuela.
What's going on inside Venezuela? What is this opposition?
I think the Venezuelan government should accept the call for new elections right after France has new elections because of the yellow protest movement, and the UK has new elections because of the unelected Prime Minister May's incompetence and historic failure with the vote.
They could start
in Brexit.
A series of Brexit votes, too. You know, why stop it and not one
and
more?
And not fulfilling the referendum's decision.
Chavez was genuinely popular in Venezuela.
Yes,
there's no question about that. Maduro came to power with impetus from Chavez. But Venezuela's economic problems since, including the Saudi oil price war on Russia and Iran, which Saudi lost, blinked, but also had a devastating bonus effect for the U.S. on Venezuela. Also, the effect of the sanctions. So Maduro is not actually extremely popular in the country. But here's the thing. The U.S. is selling a scam presenting this violent opposition. All right, they've participated in multiple assassination attempts, coups, burning of Chavistas in the streets, and so on. It has more than a 70% disapproval rating in the country by Venezuela's opposition's own polls.
And they're not even unified, these different groups. I want to say something because I think it's important here. Venezuela has a big corruption problem, too. Okay, and the allocation of government funds is not the best. Let's be honest about it.
In the same poll, they asked a question, what is the primary concern of the Venezuelan people? More than 68% said the economy. Less than 4% said corruption. So, again, we see this replay of corruption is to remove governments in Ukraine, Venezuela.
The economy is dysfunctional in many ways because of corruption. Let's be fair.
It's up to the Venezuelan people decide their fate.
Thank you.
You know, the fact that more than half of Americans don't have $10,000 in their bank account, the fact that millions of Americans live paycheck to paycheck doesn't give anyone the right to decide, for any other kind, to decide, American elections or politics. And the Americans have no right to interfere in the domestic affairs of Venezuela or any other country.
Okay. One last comment on Venezuela, and I want to talk about Roger Stone. Go ahead.
Well, it was a great suggestion from the Russian Prime Minister Medvedev. What would happen if in the United States, after seeing this confrontation between Pelosi and Trump, and Trump basically giving in, someone from Russia or someone from Caracas would say, Trump, you're incompetent. Nancy Pelosi, or whatever her name is.
We recognize Nancy.
we can't pronounce her name, but she is better than you. So what would be the reaction in the United States?
Nancy Pelosi's name has already been mentioned in our conversation here. On her website, and I'm talking about the recent indictment and arrest and indictment of Roger Stone, a political trickster by his own definition, and a confidant of one degree or another with Donald Trump. This is what Nancy's reaction to the indictments were. The indictment of Roger Stone makes clear that there was a deliberate, coordinated attempt by top Trump campaign officials to influence the 2016 election and subvert the will of the American people. That's right. Trump's orbit wanted him to win the presidency.
That's what campaigns do.
And that's what it's all about here. Victor, your reaction here, because all of the indictments that Mueller's come up with are either before so-called collusion or process crimes as a result of the investigation itself.
And, and this is exactly what it is with Roger Stone. None of the charges deal with collusion. None of the charges deal with dealing with foreign actors. All the charges deal with obstruction of justice and other related so-called crimes. The other thing to watch for here is the way he was actually arrested. It's a pre-dawn raid. I can't use any other phrase than almost jackbooted thugs. This is a massive FBI operation. This is a 66, soon to be 67-year-old man.
Are you suggesting that automatic weapons and body armor weren't necessary?
This is 6 a.m. 6 a.m., 66-year-old man who was not going to run anywhere. So they surrounded his house. They ran up to
CNN got it all, remarkably here.
And CNN claims that they didn't have a tip off. It's pretty obvious that they did.
But, you know, if you've been watching Roger Stone's public appearances over the last, particularly last few months, he was waiting to be indicted. He was waiting, okay? And all he needed to do, have his lawyer, have the authorities contact his lawyer, and he would have showed up in the courthouse.
Well, probably he just wanted to be in the news, but I like the logic of CNN. You know, they have that story, why was Roger Stone so dangerous? Why was he indicted? Well, that's because Trump said
because
during his campaign...
Who killed Kennedy?
Trump said during his campaign in July 2016, Russia, if you are listening, I hope you are able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing, you know, from Mrs. Clinton. CNN seriously writes that it's not immediately clear if Roger Stone was acting on his own, or he was spurred, and the Russian spy activity was spurred by Trump's comments.
The
left doesn't have any humor anymore. Peter. But Victor, Victor here, I mean, Roger Stone is a very, he's a braggart, he's boastful, he's very self-centered. Of course, we've been watching this for years here. But there is, in looking at the indictment, it looks like Mueller's just writing a story, and it's things that have not been confirmed. The whole role that WikiLeaks played in this and their relationship with Trump, none of that has been proven, but it's alleged and assumed in the indictment.
Why has Roger Stone been charged? Why has he been arrested and put through this process has started? Because Mueller thinks that Roger Stone, he can flip him. He can force him to flip and say things that he needs him to say against Trump. He doesn't care about Roger Stone, just like he didn't really care about Paul Manafort. Even the judge, one of the judges in the Manafort trials, actually said that, you know, you don't really care about Mr. Manafort. It's Trump who you're going after. Transparent. But Manafort, he apparently at this point, he couldn't get what he wanted from Manafort. That's why he has charged Manafort with lying, and he has tried to get the settlement deal sort of blocked now because he didn't get. Manafort didn't say what he wanted him to say. Mueller doesn't really want the truth. Mueller wants what he wants to get.
Stop. You got it. Okay, we've run out of time here. Many thanks to my guests here in Moscow. This is the end of our broadcast segment. Stay with us for the extended version on our YouTube channel. See you next time, and remember, Crosstalk Rules.
You're listening to Weekday World on CPR, CommunityPublicRadio.org. I'm your host, Don DeBar.